Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African Dale Ray Skeepers started playing the piano at age 5. He was self-taught and played by ear for 10 years. At 15, Dale went for formal music training at Hosanna Music School. Here he completed his grade 4 practical piano exams and studied up until grade 5 music theory with Royal Schools. Dale continued classical training until the age of 19. In 2009, Dale enrolled at the Campus of Performing Arts, where he studied for 2 years under the mentorship of jazz extraordinaire André Benker. He then joined the international production company Showtime Australia, for whom he would work as a vocalist, keyboardist, saxophonist, and musical director. Dale spent 3 years touring internationally with the company for various productions, namely The Greatest Love of All and The Michael Jackson History Show. In 2014, Dale ventured into musical theatre as an actor, singer, and dancer. He has since been cast in a number of musicals, including Janice Honeyman's famous pantomimes. He then shifted to working as a musical director of these productions. Janice's 2024 pantomime will mark the 10th consecutive panto that Dale has been involved in. In 2016, Dale founded the Dale Ray Productions. His company has been responsible for heading up the music for numerous corporate events and theatre shows. In 2020, Dale landed the role of Prince in the internationally acclaimed production 1999, The Ultimate Prince Experience. The show has since been touring internationally. Dale has been nominated for multiple Naledi Theatre Awards, and in 2023, he took the award for Best Musical Director. Some other highlights include being chosen by world-renowned jazz pianist Abdullah Ibrahim to play in his youth orchestra, co-writing the musical Penelope Pixie's Birthday Adventure, which was nominated for a Durban Theatre Award, performing with Garth Taylor as an opening act for Grammy nominee Brian McKnight, and being appointed as the musical director of the Tony Award-winning musical The Color Purple. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Dale Ray Skeepers. Where do we find you in the world, and how are you doing?
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate this opportunity. I'm in Johannesburg. That's where you can find me for the most part of the year. Social media, I'm not the biggest fan. I have a lot of people who tell me that I need it for my career, but I haven't had it for the longest time and I haven't needed it for my career. So you can't find me on the socials every once in a blue moon when I'm advertising a show, but that's a blue moon.
While we're on the topic, what don't you like about social media?
Oh, I don't think it's good for people's mental health.
Okay.
In many ways, I think it stopped us for being, for having proper interaction with friends. Mm-hmm. And as a result, having actual friends, real friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, you often have people who say, yeah, we know it's bad, but it's good for, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas I say it the other way around. I say it's good for this, it's good for that, but it's, these are the reasons why I don't think it's good. Which obviously changes the emphasis on where you're kind of which side of the fence you lie on. So, And it's so nice to have people call you for your birthday or phone you to tell you that they're pregnant or that they're getting married rather than seeing it with the rest of the world.
Okay, so let's rewind. At what age did you decide, cool, whether it was a teenager, child, did you think, cool, I want to be in the entertainment or music world or creative space? And how did that journey accumulate to where we are today?
I've played piano all my life. Literally for as long as I can remember. So I always usually say from the age of 5, but that's just because I think that's as far as I can remember. There was a piano in our home and I just played by ear. I can't even tell you how or when. I just always remember sitting by the piano, playing things, learning things by ear. It wasn't even a possibility in my mind that I could be full-time in the industry. You know, that time all I saw was the famous people on the radio, the Whitney Houstons and the Michael Jacksons, and I just assume that that's so unattainable and didn't think of any other avenues in the field. Then I moved from with my parents from Cape Town to Johannesburg, and it was a tough move on me. Cultural shock. I had all my friends. I moved just as I started high school, so I just hated life when I first moved to Johannesburg. And my mom was con so concerned about me because I was so, I mean, I'd go to school, come home and sleep for the whole afternoon to wake up, have dinner and just watch TV and sleep again. So it was quite a depressing time. My mom got concerned about me and enrolled me at this music school and just to go for piano lessons. And that's the first time I learned piano theory and how to read music and all of that, which was very new to me because I've just been playing by ear. And then my music teacher there, whose name is Ricky Martins, it has an S at the end, so it's not Ricky Martin. He had a studio, and I wrote a song once, played it for him, and he wanted me to come and record in his studio. And that was the first taste of studio work that I got. And he was the one who encouraged me to kind of go full time into the industry. Because then I got so into recording. In fact, I sold my PlayStation for 3,000 rand so I can buy basic recording equipment. I got so into recording, I was torn between music and production. And then he told me about this college where they offer both, and it's a campus of performing arts, which was in Kensington, Johannesburg at the time. And I went there and then studied music production, and then the rest is history. Now I'm here. So
Okay.
quite the journey.
So, a couple of things. So, you said you learned to play piano by ear as a child. So, when you actually started going for actual lessons, was there a lot of differences in how you taught yourself to how it's, in inverted commas, actually learned? And was there challenges for you to actually affiliate what you'd learned by ear to what was taught?
In some ways it was easy, in others not. So, because music is music and it's what you hear, it's not theory. People have put music into theory and it's this box that we now learn music from. Because it's music that helped, because I could hear what I needed to play. I could hear when something was wrong. I could hear when something sounded good. And I guess that helped in a big way, and also being comfortable with the piano under my fingers. You know, often people that are learning for the first time have never played the piano. So I was comfortable with the piano, with the keys under my fingers. The theory part of it, what was nice about that is that it made sense of everything, of a lot that I was doing. So I now knew the names for it. I now understood why this chord works for that chord and things like that. The biggest challenge for me was the reading. Because now I've been playing just using my ear. Now having to use my eyes to play music was a challenge. So, and I mean, I haven't read I never read a day in my life before that. So that was the biggest challenge. In fact, because of how I started musically, it's still a challenge. I'm still not the greatest reader compared to a lot of guys out there. But I managed to fake it till I made it. Yeah, so that was the biggest challenge. But I definitely think having played before helped. And when I was younger, my parents actually, because I played by ear all the time, I mean, I was 5 years old playing the South African national anthem. So only now am I able to see how, in a way, bizarre that is. If I saw a 5-year-old, I'd be like, this is crazy. But obviously they knew at the time. So my parents' friends would come over and they'd ask me to play, and I never wanted to. I'd be so upset, be so annoyed at them asking me to play all the time. They started putting 5 rands on the piano, and I was only too happy to play then. But because I was playing by ear, a lot of people told my parents, don't send him for music lessons because what he's doing is enough. They all said it's gonna ruin the talent that I had. So because of that, that's the reason why I didn't go to music lessons all of those years. So yeah, eventually going it well, I was grateful. And it's weird because there's a part of me that wished I'd went before so that I could have learned these things earlier on. But maybe people were right. Maybe it would have changed the way I view music today.
So you said that you couldn't read music and you were faking it until you made it. So was anyone aware or not? It was a challenge to read the music, not that you couldn't. Was anyone aware of that challenge? Did you make anyone, not like your teacher or anyone you were interacting with, or did you pretend?
Well, my teacher would know if from the first minute that I don't read music. But going into the industry, I'm very transparent about a lot. Having said that, there's a fine line between being transparent and honest about what your weaknesses are, but also presenting confidence. And that's the thing. It's one of those things where at the end of the day, you just make it work. I get the job done. So if I had to pitch for something, or someone was interviewing me for a job, or wanted to know what my professional history is, I've learned that it's not the best thing to say the things you can't do. Just say, yes, I can get it done. If you know you can get it done by going a different way around without having to do the things that's a challenge for you. So half and half, I'm transparent about it, but also know that sometimes expressing your weaknesses in front of producers or directors, that will cause you to not get the job. Because if I was looking for someone to do some work for me, I would just want them to say, yep, I'll get it done. So that's where I would fake it until.
You finished your college studying music and production, and then you moved into a whole array of different aspects in the entertainment world. So I want to touch on
Yes.
a few of them. What is being a musical director for a theater show? What does that entail, and what does that encompass for people who do not know what that is?
So basically, everything you hear that is music falls under the blanket of what the musical director's job is. So even sometimes going as far as the music that plays while people walk in. Often the sound guy will say, give me a playlist or something. So everything you hear that's music from the beginning of the show till the end is the musical director's responsibility. Basically, I would put the band together. Sometimes producers choose a band on their own. Other times they will let the musical director decide who the band is, which is always better because then you get to work with people you know and you understand their limitations and capabilities. So put the band together. I would arrange all the music for the band. By that, it really just means putting the music together. What the bass player is going to play, what the guitarist is going to play, what the drummer and what the piano player is going to play. So essentially, as a musical director, you need to understand what all of those instruments do. Or you can't really direct them. So knowing what they're supposed to play, writing out the music so that they can have it, and then obviously making sure they're playing the right thing. And then from there, you can get a bit more creative because sometimes you'll hear some things and say, let's do this, let's do that. So the final decision ultimately lands with you if there's any discrepancies or, but having said that, if you're working for myself, I work with some blessed to work with some really good musicians whom I can trust to also come up with some ideas and trust if they were to say something sounds weird there and say, okay, wait, then we need to fix it. So it's basically just having that person that the glue that keeps everything together. Otherwise, you have five, six, seven people in the room all giving. I mean, in any leadership role, that's ultimately what you do is that the buck stops with someone. But then also, musical theater, we have a cast. We have an ensemble that all sing. We have lead actors that all sing. So that then also falls under the musical director's responsibility, where you would arrange it in the way you wanted, different voice groups as if it were a choir, and then also write out that music so that they can have it, teach that music and make sure that it sounds the way you want it to sound, ultimately putting the cast, all the singing and the band together. Often for musical theater, it's not the same for every show in terms of the different avenues of music, but for musical theater, you would often end up conducting as well. Yeah, so making sure everyone plays on time by moving your hands around.
So that means you that you are in the theater every night for every show.
Sometimes. So that's if I'm playing as well, or if we need a conductor in the show, then I will be there. Other times, I won't be there. I'll direct the music, direct the singers, stay there for the first few shows, and then my job will be complete after that, and then they just carry the show on.
Now, what is the difference for when you're doing being a music director for a show like Michael Jackson History Tribute Show compared
Yes.
to doing a show like Phantom of the Opera, Les Miserables, because like the Michael Jackson History Show is continuous music all the time. It's not much talking in between. Whereas,
yeah.
Well, I mean, Phantom is also singing all the time. But let's say another show like Mamma Mia, where it's
yes.
talking and singing and then talking and singing, or any other type of musical theater. So what's the difference between those? And would you approach them the same or differently?
So definitely very differently. There's a lot of aspects to consider. So obviously the genre of music plays a big part. If I was directing Phantom of the Opera against Mamma Mia, the style of singing I will direct completely differently. So obviously Michael Jackson against Mamma Mia, obviously completely, well, not completely different, both pop music. But there's obviously a certain style we go for when we think of Mamma Mia and the style. So with a Michael Jackson show, we can do some cool things on the bass guitar, some cool things with the drums. Whereas Mamma Mia, it would be, you know, you kind of want to play it the way people know it. You don't want to be too flashy. It's not those type of songs, something like a Dancing Queen and those things. So in terms of the style, that's one of the aspects. Another one, which is a big one, is concert style versus musical theater.
Yes.
Because the Michael Jackson History Show, as much as it is performed in theaters, it's not really, it doesn't fall under musical theater. So I need to think of that show as a concert style. The music needs to keep moving all the time.
Yeah.
You need to lay out the set list in a way that keeps people interested all the time. Whereas a musical theater show, there's a lot more that comes into play. So as you said, there's lots of dialogue in between. We often have something which is called underscoring. And that means the music that's played softly underneath someone else speaking. Or often in musical theater, the underscoring is set to a certain length and the actors need to speak over that. Other times, there's a bit of a vamp where we just go on until the actor is finished speaking. So those things all need to be considered. The musical director needs to work out, okay, you need to speak here. By the time we get to this chord, you need to be saying that line. And obviously listening and watching the whole time, because actors makes mistakes.
Yeah.
So, and if someone misses a line or says something for too long, you have to figure out on the spot, you know, we can't be going to the chorus now because he's not going to be finished with his dialogue. So figure something out. And we usually have a talk back mic where the whole band can hear the musical director speak that doesn't come through the front of our speakers. And that's very helpful because then I will say, okay, let's play this bar again, or let's go back to this bar because he's not done yet. And then count them in for whenever the chorus comes in or whatever. So yeah, that's a huge difference. And then also the point of it, you know, musical theater is very much about storytelling. So just to make sure that the story comes across in terms of how things are sung, in terms of not playing something too jarring underneath what someone is saying, maybe punctuating something that's very important. Whereas with Michael Jackson, it's a concert and people just want to hear the music and dance. So there's not much storytelling involved. So yeah, very different shows and very different approaches when musical directing a show like that.
Okay, so now you also do acting, front of camera and on stage. So first of all, first question, what do you enjoy about acting?
I love the depth of acting. I love being able to kind of really go into the mind of someone that might not be real or was real and portray that, because we are ourselves, right? So we're just living our lives with all of our conditioning and whatever the brain we were given, the emotions we were given. So we just live our lives and often don't really delve into how, I mean, I think it's important that people do, but don't delve into why I'm like this or why I react in this way. Or whereas when you are analyzing a character, you have that opportunity to do that, which often helps you in your own life, because you look at the characters, the character's upbringing, the character's insecurities, and then portraying that. So that's, I love the depth of acting, because it's not just reading the lines on the page, it's going into the mind of a character. That's what I absolutely love about acting.
And the difference between acting on stage and acting behind the camera.
So I actually don't have a lot of experience behind the camera.
Okay.
The experience I do have are ads. I've done only two adverts, if I'm correct. I
Oh,
think I
okay.
did a third, but it didn't end up happening. I did two ads. One of the biggest difference, I mean, and just speaking from my experience in doing those ads, would be how exaggerated you need to be on stage
Okay.
for people at the back of the theater to see, whereas the camera's on your face, zoomed in, so you don't have to be that animated or exaggerated. Knowing also need to be know that everyone can see your every facial expression or eyebrow movement.
Yeah.
So you'll have to be very aware of things like that. Whereas on stage, not necessarily that much. So it's definitely the size of yourself in terms of whether you're behind camera, slightly smaller. You
Yeah.
can't do the same thing that you do behind camera on stage, because it'll just be boring.
And then, so when you're in a show or production that you're just acting and you're not part of the musical team or directing team, how do you extend yourself or take yourself out of the musical directing brain and just understand, cool, I'm just here to act in this production and separate yourself from that? Or does it sometimes get blurred and you start thinking, okay, they should be doing this, they should be doing that, and I need to give them advice?
It is a difficult thing. It is a difficult, especially when you hear something that you don't particularly like, that you think you would do differently. I think a big part of that is humility, knowing your place. So when I am performing on stage, it's important for me to know that this is my place. And regardless of what the musical director says that I might have done differently, he's in his position that I respect. And so, I mean, it really is a difficult thing, and I strive to do the right thing in that sense. I know a lot of guys who don't. I've worked with some instrumentalists who also work as musical directors, who become extremely difficult to work with because they're constantly questioning what your decisions are.
Oh, my. Okay.
So I, yeah, it's, and that's why I say it's all about humility, knowing that this is my place, and I in this situation, they are the leader and
Yeah.
I am the performer.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely difficult, but definitely doable. And I think the biggest one is just being humble.
Now, being on stage, portraying whatever character, whether it's musical or not, us as an audience come and see one show. We're there for one day, but you guys are doing 8 shows a week, every night, almost night, plus rehearsals. How do you maintain your energy, maintain your body mind levels in order to maintain that whole journey of being part of that production for that period of time and so many performances?
I don't know.
Okay.
No. No, I think that's a professionalism thing. Knowing, I mean, it's thinking of like any other job. If you were a psychiatrist, or if you are a doctor, or if you are working in insurance with disability claims or something, each person is treated as an individual. You go in, you do your job. As a psychiatrist, you can't come in pissed off from the last, ten call consults you had for the day, and that bleeds out into the last person you get. In the sa same thing with a doctor, he can't decide, oh, I'm not going to put effort into treating you because I've been doing this all day. So I think just the mindset of professionalism, the mindset of knowing that this is a new audience. They paid the same amount of money the last audience came for, so I need to give the same amount of energy. And as every different job comes with its different responsibilities, the responsibility of a performer is to give that same energy regardless of how you feel. So, I mean, I can be going through the worst time at home, but I come there and I do my job not bringing that
Yep.
into the room. So there are obviously people who aren't professional. They can be in a bad mood, having a bad day, and just don't do the right things on stage. Those are the people that don't usually get booked the second time. But so yeah, professionalism, extremely important. It's not all fun and games. And that's the thing. A lot of people tend to think that performing is, you always get the saying, people say, oh, how does it feel doing what you love? And I often think, well, don't you, what you do you not love what you do? Yes, it is something that we love, but at the same time, it's a job. So we get tired as everyone else does. We get frustrated with work as everyone else does. And no one seems to want to give performers a chance to complain about work. There's always this, oh, you need to be grateful that you have work. But again, I compare it to any other job. A doctor should be grateful that he or she has work.
You need to understand that in the region of 80 to 90% of the population are not doing the work they love. They're just doing it for the money. So they perceive that performers are following their passion and following their dreams because it's not a steady flow of money. It's not as secure as any other job, in inverted commas, so to speak. So that's why you get that feedback.
Yes, okay, that makes total sense.
What are the next couple of projects you're working on?
At the moment, the currently over the next few months, my couple of months, or 3 or 4 months maybe, a lot of my time is going into teaching and lecturing. So I'm going to be at Wits for a while, and I'm working on a school production for a while. So that's what's coming up. Which the one thing I love about my job in particular is that it's so, there's no chance for it to be monotonous. It's different stuff all the time. It's, especially as a musical director. I mean, if I was a musician, you kind of always just, which I am, but I'm kind of, if that's all I was, I'm just always playing piano. Yes, different shows, but I'm always playing it. Whereas, same thing as an actor, as a dancer, whereas as a musical director, I get to direct the show. Like I was talking about, the approach becomes so different. So I get to lecture, and I get to teach. I get to work with a school production. I get to record in the studio, something that's completely different to anything live. I get to work with a choir, as well as working with a small band, as well as working with a huge band, a 12-piece band or something. So I'm grateful for the fact that it doesn't get monotonous. So in for the next few months, it's teaching, and then after that, I'm currently performing as the lead performer in a Prince tribute show. So I play Prince.
Oh, lovely.
That's coming up. Yeah, that's coming up in May. We're doing a tour in New Zealand, and then end of August, early September, we'll be at the Joburg Theatre,
Oh,
which is going
cool.
to be the first time. Yeah, the first time the show is happening in South Africa, and then after that, move on to Australia. And then I've got one big corporate event, that's an annual one that I do for Rand Merchant Bank, for their conference. And then the pantomime at the end of the year, which I've been doing now consecutively for 10 years.
Oh,
So
awesome.
yeah, so it's all very different. Grateful that my year is planned out. Those are the things I'm working on. And then little things come in here and there, which is also nice.
So that's fantastic. So you've got a lot of interesting projects lined up. So listeners, look out for all of them wherever you are in the world. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
I'm very passionate about mental health. So I will say, even in this industry, look after your mental health. Because often, as a freelancer in the entertainment industry, we feel we need to accept every job. We feel we need to, which, I mean, there's a big part of that, because sometimes work is very few and far between. But there's many times where your mental health and physical health is more important. So that's one thing I'll say to people in the industry, which is often gets overlooked. So look after your mental health. Practice, practice, practice. There's a saying that I, something that I lived by, that I was taught a very long time ago, which is, don't practice until you get something right. Practice until you can't get it wrong. The more you work on your craft, the more, the better you're going to be, and the more work you'll get. It's not about who you know. It's about who knows you. And the only way you're going to get that is if you are you are in the top of your field. Which makes me want to say also, this is horrible, but sometimes trust the people when they tell you that you're tone deaf, because I don't want you to go through a career of disappointment.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.